The Drives podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security, disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group at 865-566-0800 or visit dag-us.com.
It's time for The Drive's Top 4 at 4.
Back here on The Drive, it's Fan Run Radio. Brandon Orick has your top 4.
Number one, the NCAA is considering a rule change that would allow college athletes to be compensated for their name, images, and likeness.
I didn't see this. Yeah, I mean, this is what a lot of people have been saying is go to the Olympic model for a long time. You know, let the colleges, you keep their money. You know, they basically keep it the way it's the same, except an athlete can, if Garrett Garantano wants to get a sponsorship deal with Oben Franklin Motors, and you know that he can do that, and as long as it's, you know, doesn't cut into his team time or whatever, if it's on his own time, he can go out there and do commercials and stuff like that, sell his own jerseys on eBay. You know, the stuff AJ Green got in trouble for, like the NCAA shouldn't have any jurisdiction over that. Let them make money off their own name and likenesses. That kind of solves the problem of, well, if you pay the quarterback, you got to pay the women's diver and stuff like that. It'll be interesting to see. I had not heard that they're not considering that, but that will be a major change, obviously, if they go through with it.
Number two, Arizona Cardinals cornerback Patrick Peterson will be suspended for the first six games of the 2019 NFL season.
Uh-oh.
After violating the league's performance-enhancing drug policy. And reports from ESPN's Adam Schefter are that Peterson has dropped his appeal. So he will not be appealing the suspension.
So he's just...
he busted.
Acknowledging it, fine with it, taking his medicine, so to speak, and moving on.
Number three. The Big Ten passes the SEC in total revenue by more than $100 million from the 2017-2018 season.
Well, they just signed a new TV deal, and I think the SEC is getting to renegotiate as well. So,
yeah, it's
probably
won't
last long.
From their deal with ESPN and Fox.
Yeah, the SEC Network lost their biggest advertiser.
Who? Oh,
Pilot Oil.
Yeah. Well,
is money going to be there?
It's a big opportunity for somebody else to I mean, that's not – that shouldn't affect the SEC money. I mean, that's ESPN's time to sell, as far as I know. But, yeah, the SEC will not be second place for long. I guarantee you that.
Okay.
Number four, Tennessee baseball opens the first game of their last series of this season tonight at 7 as the 15th-ranked Ole Miss Rebels come to Lindsey Nelson Stadium. Big series for the Vols.
The Ole Miss Rebel Black Bears are in town.
Are they the Land Sharks in baseball too?
The Land Shark, Rebel Black Bears, whatever they're calling themselves now, coming on up here, and we'll see, man. Big series this week. We're going to talk to Rusty about it coming up here in just a second. Thank you, Brandon. Top 4 at 4 brought to you this afternoon by our friends at Citizens National Bank. Bank local. Simplify your life. Turn to Citizens National Bank for all your personal banking needs. They've got a variety of checking and savings options, plus chip-enabled debit and credit cards right here in your community to help you safely and securely manage your everyday cash flow and build your rainy day savings. It's Citizens National Bank, online at cnbtn.com. Follow them on Twitter at cnbtn or just call 865-453-9031 to find the branch nearest you. Getting settled in here.
Kepka's broken. You realize he's only the only person to shoot two rounds of 63 in the PGA Championship? That's crazy.
I did not know that. He loves this tournament, evidently. And all I know is Jordan Spieth in these white pants. I just don't get the white pants.
That's almost PMS 150 whatever.
The pants?
It's no, the white. Shirt.
Oh, I didn't see a shirt.
It's orange. It
looks like something Rusty Enzer would be wearing, those white pants. Spring in.
Whoa.
Former Vol, SEC Network baseball color analyst Rusty Enzer to the festivities this afternoon. Hello, Rusty.
Russell, two things before we get going. Number one, the show is much better with you on it. That's not a knock on Bear.
Oh,
Brandon, okay?
but finally.
But listen, you are the drive, okay? You are the drive.
Oh, he's buttering me
and
up.
Number two,
here it comes.
Jordan Spieth wearing Tennessee's home uniform. He's got white pants and an orange jersey. That's the way I look at it.
I did
it
not.
Pretty good.
I did not notice that. It's
yeah, I mean, that's why I said it. His shirt's probably closer to the real orange than Nike.
And then Ricky Fowler on Sundays, he wears what Tennessee should be wearing on the road, orange pants and a white jersey.
Do you know why Ricky Fowler wears orange on Sunday?
I'm sure you're going to tell me. I think I know, but I forgot.
He's an Oklahoma State Cowboy.
That's right. That's exactly right. You're exactly right.
Yep. Good stuff. All right, Rusty, big weekend for the baseball balls. First of all, you did the Tennessee Tech game on Tuesday. I understand that was a wild affair. But
Yeah,
you didn't get out of there till late, did you?
It was a four-hour game. That's not what I was looking for. But it was a win. And I tell you, Tennessee Tech, if they had any pitching at all, they'd be a really good team. Those guys can absolutely hammer the baseball.
Wow. And so Tennessee –
I played in the Super Regional last year.
That's right. I'd forgotten that. Yeah, so Tennessee outlasts the Golden Eagles. And then this past weekend, they had a wild series with Florida that really kind of, my opinion, Rusty, is typical of what Tony Vitello has been able to do with this program. I mean, you have just a disastrous loss on Friday where you blow a big lead. And in years past, there would have been I think there has been a here we go again type mentality. Tennessee comes back and is able to grind out two huge wins on Saturday and Sunday and win a big road series against Florida when they absolutely had to have it.
Yeah, technically, when you blow a 7-run lead, that's not a recipe for success as far as winning a series on the road. But, you know, I said this on the broadcast on Tuesday night. You know, it's and Tennessee fell behind against Tennessee Tech. I mean, Tech hit three home runs in the first, I believe, four innings and had a 5-2 lead. But this team just doesn't panic. I don't know if they just have a different mindset, if the coaching staff has set them up for something different, but they don't panic when something really bad happens. It's, you know, I've always said this. I think teams, no matter what sport it is, takes on the personality of their head coach because they all spend so much time together. And for whatever reason, this team doesn't panic when it falls behind. And it's kind of fun to watch, and it's kind of refreshing. It's a good thing because they blew a 7-run lead the Sunday before at home against Missouri and ended up losing that game. But to come back and to win the series in Gainesville, I don't care what you're playing, you win in Gainesville, that's a good thing.
No doubt about it. So walk me through some of the scenarios here this weekend. Where do the Vols find themselves heading into the final week of the season, the final series of the regular season against Ole Miss?
Okay, here's the way I see it, and I'm far from an expert, okay? But Tennessee has a very good RPI, which is 10. That's not the only component that the baseball committee looks at. I'm going to give you a kind of a negative number. Tennessee only has 5 wins against the top 25, and that's kind of surprising when you have a 10 RPI. They have 12 wins in the conference, and you guys were talking earlier. Yeah, if they sweep Ole Miss this weekend, there is no doubt. If you get to that 15-win threshold, that is pretty much an automatic to get into the NCAA tournament as an at-large bid. So if you finish 500 in baseball in the SEC, that's a good season. No had a really good season in basketball, certainly not a good season in football. But in baseball, 15-15 is a good number. So Tennessee's 12-15 in the league. I think the magic number for Tennessee to make a regional is 2. If they win the series, if they win 2 out of 3 against Ole Miss, that gives them 14. I think based on their RPI, their body of work in the last 10 games, I think that's going to be good enough to get them into the NCAA tournament. If they only win 1 out of 3, then I think they need to win one game at least in Hoover, and that would be on Tuesday, and that's a single elimination. So you have to win on Tuesday in order to get to the double elimination format of the SEC tournament. The first 4 teams that finish in conference play get a bye on Tuesday, and they automatically go into the double elimination round. Now, a couple of things to think about. Tennessee hadn't won an SEC tournament game since 2007. Tennessee hadn't been to the NCAA tournament since 2005. But there's something about this team, and with the way that they beat Florida down there, you know, I have a good feeling they're going to make the tournament, but who knows? But they've got work to do.
Ole Miss, pretty stout. They're 15-12 in the league. They're playing over there in the SEC West. They're tied for third in the West with LSU. So, you know, it's not going to come easy for the Vols this weekend, but it sounded like they have a lot to play for, and playing at home has got to be a big advantage too.
Playing at home's key, and Ole Miss played on Tuesday night as well, and they played a game against Arkansas State on the road. So they went to Arkansas State, had to bus back to Oxford, then they bus to Knoxville yesterday. So they've covered some miles. But Ole Miss has got a lot to play for. Now, I think they're in the NCAA tournament, as you mentioned. They have 15 wins. They've been very inconsistent this year. They've lost series at Missouri, at Kentucky, which is not very good, and at Auburn. And they were swept last weekend against Mississippi State in Oxford. So that's the bad news. The good news is they beat Arkansas on the road. Arkansas is one of the best teams in the SEC and vying for the overall conference championship. They swept Texas A&M, and they beat LSU and Baton Rouge in a 3-game series. Their strength would be their bats. If anybody's going to the game tonight or this weekend, Ryan Olenek and Gray Kessinger, both in the top 10 of the league in batting average. Third baseman Tyler Keenan is in the top 10 in the league in home runs and runs batted in. Their catcher, Cooper Johnson, who's thrown out the second most runners from behind the plate. And that could be key because Jay Charleston, if he gets on base, he likes to run. So that could be kind of a little situation, a game within the game, as I like to mention. Now, their weak point is on the pitcher's mound. They lost 3 starters last year to the draft. So they got 3 new arms, but they are talented. They have the second highest opponent's batting average at .260, but they have allowed the second fewest walks. Tennessee staff has allowed the fewest walks in the SEC. So I think it's going to be a battle of the bats this weekend. There are not going to be many walks. There's probably going to be a lot of hits. And we just have to I'm going to break it down for you. We got to score more runs than they do. That's the bottom line.
That's some great analysis, Rusty. It's why they pay you the big one. Bucks. Hey, yeah.
Most runs wins.
It's amazing, you know, you're a purist and things change, but they always stay the same, don't they? Westchester on Twitter wants to ask a question, Rusty. He says, why does the SEC remain in divisions in baseball but then throw them away for the tournament? Should they go to a standard format?
That's a good question. You know, back when I played, which was a long, long time ago, of course, the SEC just had 10 teams. But we had divisions in baseball. We had an East and a West. And you play a home-and-home series with everybody in your division. I don't know why they did away with it in basketball. I kind of like the East and the West, you know, set up personally. But as far as getting to the tournament and everything, back in the 90s, when they did have divisions in baseball, they had a Western Division tournament and an Eastern Division tournament. I thought that was kind of silly. But, you know, I kind of like the format right now, especially when you're – I just think you need to try to play as many teams as possible. You can't play everybody with 14 teams in football and baseball, but, you know, you certainly can in basketball because there's just so many more games. But I kind of like the setup the way it is. I'm not sure I really answered the question or not, to be honest with you.
No, I mean, it's an interesting one. I'm with you. I liked it in basketball, the divisional setups. And I know that people will say, you know, back when Tennessee was killing it in football, it was, well, the balance of powers to the East. Now it's definitely in the West. So you get into issues of scheduling fairness and all this. But, you know, they still have those problems in basketball. As people recall, LSU won the championship, the league championship outright in basketball this year. And I don't recall the particulars, but they had a much easier schedule than Tennessee and Kentucky, the teams that finished second.
Yeah, when you're not playing everybody twice and you've got common opponents, especially in football, I mean, obviously there's going to be complaining and the balance of the schedule is going to be skewed because you just can't predict – you know, what your opponent's going to be like from year to year. That's, you know, that's kind of bad. But, you know, I think the league does pretty good. You know, they do the best they can. And, you know, the bottom line is you've got to be prepared to, especially in baseball, no matter who you're playing. I mean, it's a 30-game grind, and no matter who you play, the games are going to be close. And I think the games will be close this weekend, too.
Last thing for you, Rusty. We'll let you run here. I don't know if, you know, you have any – inside information to offer on this, and if you did, you might, it might be a sensitive area, but we've had a lot of people talking. There's been a little bit of buzz around town. You know, Tony Vitello he's become kind of a, I don't know if you want to say a hot name, but certainly if he wins this series and gets Tennessee to the NCAA tournament, people are starting to wonder, you know, are we going to be able to hold on to this guy and see the rebuild through? Is that a concern at all if you're Philip Fulmer, if you're Tennessee, that, you know, hey, we're going to have to take care of this guy because, you know, he's young, he's charismatic, he's got this team playing pretty good baseball. He might be a guy that other programs, as other jobs open up, want to talk to.
Well, I think, you know, anytime you're an athletic director and any of your head coaches are doing a great job, I mean, everybody's going to want them. You know, would Tony, you know, look at something else like that? Sure he would. I think he has to look at it from the standpoint of maybe what conference they're playing in, maybe what kind of facility they have. Now, you know, as Lindsey Nelson Stadium is a nice facility when you compare it throughout the country when you're talking about Pac-12, Big 12, Big 10, things like that, some of the other schools. But in the SEC, we're, you know, probably 13th. You know, and Florida's getting ready to spend $60 million on a new baseball stadium. So, you know, from that standpoint, you know, his hands are kind of tied a little bit. Now, did Coach Fulmer show some love to baseball? They spent some money underneath that a lot of people haven't seen in the locker room and the weight room and things like that. But the artificial turf down, which everybody has seen, which is certainly been, you know, something that will probably help recruiting. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, it'll just depend on, you know, what fit, I guess, Tony likes. I think he likes it here. I just can't say. But, you know, if a big-name school comes calling that has a big baseball background, I mean, I think you'd be foolish not to at least listen. And I think any coach in any sport would do the same, like Rick Barnes did with UCLA. I don't know that Rick Barnes would leave for most any other school, but UCLA had such a historical track record. I think that's probably what intrigued him about that.
Well, I was going to say, do you think Coach Vitello or any other coach on Tennessee's campus is calling up Rick Barnes and asking for, you know, negotiation advice?
I mean, that's what they all do, right? I mean, I was kind of surprised that Beilein left and coached, what, the Cavaliers or something like that. Uh-huh. I mean, I was kind of surprised, but at least he doesn't have to recruit anymore. So maybe his job's a little easier. Who knows?
the flip side is he now lives in Cleveland. I'm sure they're paying him well.
Hall of Fame. And yeah. The Browns are going to be good.
They keep saying that. I'll believe it when I see it.
I know. Exactly.
They should be good. All right, Rusty, great stuff. Looking forward to the games this weekend. Thanks for your time, my man.
Thanks, Russell. Talk to you later.
Rusty Enser making his presence felt this afternoon on the Drive. Bear, what did you learn?
We have work to do.
Oh, the baseball team. I thought you were talking about us. We got work to do, too. We got to pay these bills, folks. Quick timeout. Open up the phone lines. 865-546-8200 is your number to get on the show. 546-8200. We're back with more after this. The Drives podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group today at 865-566-0800. Applying for disability can be very tedious. Having an experienced attorney on your side makes it easy. Call Disability Advantage Group, 865-566-0800, or visit online at dag-us.com. Shout out to dedicated Fan Run listener Mark in Laguna Beach, California.
Damn.
Yeah, I know, man.
But he's living large. What are we thanking him for?
For just being a rabid listener to the show. He wrote me several DMs on Twitter last night.
Coast to coast, Russ. What about that?
Yeah, just really, really nice complimentary thing. I mean, it puffed my ego up, man. I was walking around with my chest puffed out last night. Let me tell you. Said he really likes the show, and was very complimentary. So shout out to Mark. Appreciate the kind words yesterday.
What do you say about me and Brandon?
Yeah. Hold on. I'll pull it up for you. I can't. I mean, he wrote me. It was really sweet. So he's moved around a lot and settled out there in California. One of his brothers turned him on to the show. He doesn't really have any ties to East Tennessee, but he's just fallen in love with it and has kind of become a Vols fan from listening to the show.
Well, hell yeah. I can get behind that.
Says, I guess it's just roots, Russ. Think hee-haw. But Bear and some callers glide by the hee-haw soundstage. I don't know what that means.
Me either.
Trust me, the rest of it was much more coherent and nice. and he said that he flips it on at noon Pacific time and says the show is therapeutic in an odd way.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, very therapeutic. That's the word that I associate with the show.
I mean, I'm doing this instead of full-on therapy and psychiatric counseling.
How's that working out for you?
Well, I mean, some ways it's good, and then my anger management issues aren't really going away, having to deal with you 5 days a week, but, you know, there is that.
Wow.
Do you get a chance to have a positive influence on Brandon and young Reek?
And Mark in California.
And Mark in California.
No doubt.
Countless others, I'm sure.
This has been a weird day, man. I apologize. I was here late, much later than I thought I was going to be, and I'm going to be leaving early, too, here in an hour.
Yeah, we've already talked about that.
Yeah, you're here for like an hour. You've mailed it in.
I have legitimate excuses all the way around. My daughter is graduating elementary school tonight.
We don't need excuses, Russ.
Hey, you tell her Uncle Bear's proud of her.
I'm proud of her, man. Like, it's weird to me, though, that we have elementary school graduation. Did you guys have that?
No.
I did not have that.
Are you asking me? Seriously?
Oh, well, the better question for Bear is, did you graduate elementary school?
Yes, I did, with honors. What was it your baby girl said about me?
It's hard to feel sorry for Bear.
All right.
She likes you, though. Yeah, she likes it, so it's a big deal. I was told like it. I wasn't planning on going because my first reaction is like, no, I'm not going to elementary school graduation. And then I got the kind of like
the look,
the shame. Like I felt the shame creep over me. I was like, okay, I'll go.
Shame creep over you.
I'll go. How long is it going to last? She's thinking an hour. Oh, my God, an hour in an elementary school.
I don't know, there's no internet access, buddy.
I don't know where the time goes, man. 11 years old.
Yeah.
11 years old. I was 27 when she was born.
I still remember the day when I think Fred and Richie did the show the day Little Man was born.
Yeah.
It was back in the day.
He's four now. Goes by fast, man. I got a new podcast coming out tomorrow. Sat and talked with Joan Cronin this morning.
What?
Yep.
You're kidding me.
Yep. She's going into the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame this summer. I'd never met her before. She's such a sweet lady.
Who did she hire? She made a hire.
She hired Dave Serrano.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't hold her responsible. First of all, she was basically, I think, almost already hired. Like, she did interview and sign off on it, I think. But I think Mike Hamilton kind of gotten the wheel started in that. And, I mean, that is the one hire that is just
baffling.
Yeah, it's like we all were in favor of it at the time. We all thought it was going to work out. We thought this is the guy who's going to fix it. And it just did not. I mean, it was 5 years of utter futility.
Joan ask about me?
No.
Really?
No, Bear. Do you know her?
Well, I figured she's a big fan.
No. Interestingly enough, she asked a lot of questions about the show and the station. I said, well, you know, if you tune us in and you hear some real high-level ignorance, like, don't hold it to it's – It's
Don't
just
hold it
the
against
thing.
Me.
Yeah, it's just the thing. No, she's inspiring, man. I did not know she's a Louisiana girl.
Huh.
From Opelousas, Louisiana.
Where is that? Down the
just
swamp?
South of Baton Rouge. Oh, yeah. Way down there. And she went to LSU.
I didn't know that.
Neither did I. For some reason, I was thinking that she was East Tennessee. For some reason, I was thinking she was a Bearden girl. And I guess I was just conflating that with Holly.
No,
but
Raging Cajun.
Yeah. So, and man, she is the woman is 70 years old.
Really?
And she keeps a schedule that would like puts all of us to shame. She's up at 5 a.m. She's playing golf and all this and that. I mean, very vibrant. And so it was a really good talk, and I'll have that up.
I always liked her.
I'm going to cut that up for you for us tonight, and that'll be available podcast. Should be up tomorrow. So looking forward to that. Major programming announcement coming up here in about a little over half an hour, 5 o'clock. We are going to be – we'll do the top 5 at 5, and then we have a major programming announcement as we complete all family business tonight here on Fan Run Radio. So tune in for that around 5:05. We are looking forward to that. We are also looking forward to Bears PGA Championship Leaderboard Scoreboard Update. Center Bear, go ahead and get that ready because we're going to be coming to you right after we talk to David Robbins, who is going to be competing in the Valor Fighting Challenge event coming up on Saturday night out at Smokies Park in Sevierville. You want to take in some MMA under the lights this weekend. Should be a really cool thing. David, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you?
Hey, doing very well. So you are down based out of Cleveland, Tennessee.
Yes, sir. That's right.
All right. And you own a gym down there?
Yes, sir. I own American Killer Bees. It's here in Cleveland. I've had it for about 3 years now.
Okay. So how did you – I guess you've always been around combat sports, probably a big MMA fan. How did you go from that to owning and operating a gym?
So I started – I started doing this when I was about 15. I'm 28 now, so it's been 13 years. I was going to college, and I spent several years kind of in and out, unsure on what I wanted to do. I had a daughter when I was 16, so by the time I was about 24, she was getting older, and I had already worked with a lot of fighters, you know, pros and amateurs both. I mean, I needed to make money. I was planning on going to medical school. It's what both my parents did, but I didn't want to spend another 4 years in school. So,
understandable. I'm reading some notes that Shamir sent me here. It says that you're known for striking, but also a brown belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. What is your game plan this weekend? Are you going to try? And I see where you're 3-0 as a pro with three TKOs in the first round. So are you coming out looking for the big strike, or are you comfortable going down to the mat?
I'm equally comfortable in both places. It doesn't bother me. I'm not looking for one thing in particular. I'm just going to kind of take what he gives me and go from there. I like striking, like hitting people. It's good. It gets my frustration out sometimes. But, you know, if he takes me down, I feel very confident in my jiu-jitsu, and I'll submit him. So,
is your jiu-jitsu something that you've been working on for a long time now, or is that I know for a lot of folks who might do, you know, taekwondo or, you know, boxing or something like that, that's probably the biggest adjustment they have to make when they get into MMA.
So I've been doing jiu-jitsu for the same amount of time as the Muay Thai, the kickboxing. Been doing it for about 13 years.
Wow.
I've competed a whole lot more in jiu-jitsu than I have in anything else. I've had 19 amateur fights. There was 10 in Muay Thai and 9 MMA fights. I've now 3 pro fights, but I've probably had well over 100 jiu-jitsu matches. So I'm fine there as well. Yes, honestly, I feel there's not a whole lot of guys in the area that can match my skill set. You know, they might be as good or better than me at striking, or, you know, vice versa in the jiu-jitsu, but I don't feel there's many guys around here that have the same level as me on both.
Well, I mean, you're definitely off to a good start, 3-0 again as a pro, and TKOs in the first round. I mean, you're 28 years old. Like, how far do you think you can take this?
I believe I can go, you know, all the way up to the UFC. I just need a shot. So I've been around it for a long time, but my body's not all beat up. You know, there's some guys who, by the time they're my age, they've had so many fights, they don't have too many years left. I still feel, you know, pretty fresh. UFC champion, I don't know, maybe, but, you know, there's no reason I can't be fighting on a big show, either UFC or Bellator. If they called me tomorrow, I would take that. You know, I feel that I'm already at that level. So.
What weight class are you fighting at?
I've been fighting at 170. You know, I'm going to try to drop down to lightweight at 155. We'll see how that goes. I'd be a big 155er, so I walk about 185. But I'm going to try that out in probably July. If the cut goes well and I perform well, I'm going to stay there. If not, I'll need to put some muscle on. I'll stay at 170.
That's a big weight cut, man. Good luck with that.
Well, I fought 160 before.
Okay.
The thing was, as an amateur, anytime I tried to fight as a lightweight, the opponent would back out.
They just didn't want to. I mean, you were just so much bigger, they didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah, well, they would get close, and I think that, you know, as you get closer to the fight, it kind of starts to get more real, and I think it just set in for them, and they just backed out of it. But sometimes, you know, things come up, but there's a lot of good 155s and 170s around, and I'll stay pretty busy for the next couple months.
Excellent. Well, David, best of luck to you this weekend out at Smokies Park. Have you ever fought outside like this before?
No, I haven't fought outside. Interested to see what the weather's going to be like this weekend. I'm hoping that, you know, it's kind of a cooler evening and it's not too bad. I hope it's not like a hot day. That's going to suck, because I've had some friends that have fought outside and they told me it just zaps them just so quickly.
Wow. So interesting. Well, I guess the good news is it would be hot for both fighters, right?
Yeah. No. And I know that if he's tired, or if I'm tired, then he's going to be tired too. There's no way he's in better shape than me. So.
All right. Very, very confident. David Robbins, best of luck to you, man, Saturday. Thanks so much for jumping on with us.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Yep, that's David Robbins fighting out of Cleveland. You can see him Saturday night down at Smokies Park, Valor Fighting Challenge 59, fight night at Smokies Stadium. Fight start about 6 o'clock. You can get tickets at smokiesbaseball.com/MMA. SmokiesBaseball.com/MMA. And we're going to have some tickets to give away to that one, too. So if you're interested, let me know. I'll try and get you hooked up here. Let's get Westchester in here next on The Drive. Hello, Westchester. You're on Fox Sports Knoxville.
Hey, how we doing, gentlemen?
Doing well, doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, you told me something I didn't know, and that's I thought I knew everything there was to know about how much I hated Joan Cronin, but you didn't tell me she was an LSU grad. I didn't know she was an LSU grad.
Are you taking a shot at my interview guest right now?
Oh, I'll take a shot at Joan Cronin.
Freaking stupid. 865-546-8200. Your number to get on the show, 546-8200. I mean, like, how big of an idiot can you be? I mean, I don't know. Like, what? Barry, can we do your I spent an hour and a half with this lady this morning, and she is the sweetest person I maybe have ever interviewed. Like, I'm just not going to, you know, I mean, like, it's just idiotic.
It's like, she's one of the few administrative people that have worked over there that I respect, and she did, you know.
I was joking at first, but no. Whatever, man. All right, Bear, PGA Championship scoreboard leaderboard update center. Hit the music, Brandon.
All right. As told the listeners in hour one, mm-hmm. Brooks Koepka from America.
Old Brooksy.
He burnt down Bethpage Black, did not birdie any of the par fives, yet still shot a 63, Russ. He sits at -7 atop the leaderboard.
Did he eagle any of them? Or do you play all the par fives at par?
I'll find out for you.
Okay.
But I don't want to touch anything because this will mess up my leaderboard.
What are you on right now? Never mind. Just go ahead. Just go ahead.
What are you doing?
Just go ahead. Go!
Devin Lee is at -4 through 15.
Danny Lee.
Okay. Tommy Fleetwood from, looks like Norway. England. That's not an English flag, dude.
That's England's flag.
No.
Tommy Fleetwood is English.
That's not England's flag.
Yeah, it is.
We'll talk about it after.
You're thinking of the Union Jack, the Great Britain flag. That is England's flag. England is part of Great Britain.
Now you've pissed me off, man. I lost my scoreboard.
For stating fact?
Leaderboard.
Are you going to crash and burn right now?
No.
Do you need me to bail you out?
No.
I'm here for you.
Finish strong, Bear.
Ricky Fowler, -1.
You skipped a few, but
yeah.
Okay.
The afternoon guys are off. Tony Finau.
Finau.
Whatever. Is it -1 through 13? Let's see if it's funny. What are you doing?
Focus.
You ruined it.
You're losing focus.
Jim Furyk with his wacky swing is at even par at -9.
Where's Tiger?
Tiger is all the way down at... He's tied for 58th, +2 for the round.
Oh!
Let's see if we get any notables down at the bottom.
Tiger's got some
John
work
Daly
do.
At +4. What about him and Tiger's comment to him this week?
I didn't see that.
You know they're letting Daly use a cart, right?
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
He's got health problems.
Old and fat?
Yeah. Arthritis, I guess. Tiger made a statement that he pointed out that he walked an entire round with a broken leg.
Oh, Tiger off the top rope. I mean, he's not lying. That was such a huge. Who was the golfer like 20 years ago?
Corey.
Was it Casey Martin?
Casey Martin.
He had like some degenerative leg condition. Like his leg was basically just bone. And it caused him a lot of pain to walk. He was a great golfer. I think he played in college somewhere. And I remember doing this, it's a big sports radio. I mean, it was a perfect sports radio controversy topic, right?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like, should he be able to use the cart? And people were coming down with great arguments on both sides of it. And I never, like, I mean, I guess I tended to be empathetic towards him. Like, that was a condition that I believe he was born with. And it was just
unfortunate.
It took John Daly's like, the man doesn't take care of himself.
Yeah. He smokes 8 packs a day. He drinks a quart of whiskey, probably.
And the PGA, of course, he's won it twice. So he gets a lifetime exemption, I believe. And, of course, they want him there because it's
– sells tickets.
Yeah, he's a big draw, and the galleries love him and everything. I don't know, man. Like, I – you know, if – and I, he's older now. There's no way he's going to contend for the – when was the last time he was in contention for anything? Like, it's been at least 5 years, if not 10.
It's probably closer to 15 or 20.
But can you imagine if he put together some good rounds and is out there in contention on the weekend and is using the card? I mean, I know that's probably not going to happen, but.
Oh, the fallout from that?
I kind of feel like.
Especially if he's playing, like, against Tiger or something.
I kind of feel like unless you have a really specific, special condition, you need to be out there walking. And if you can't walk, then you can't play. Sorry. Yeah. This is the PGA Championship. This is a major tournament that, you know, there are a lot of really good professional golfers that aren't in it, aren't good enough right now. And I don't know. That's interesting. All right, stay with us. The Drive continues. Fox Sports Knoxville. Quick timeout. We're back with more right after this. So, somebody pointed out that John Daly, I misspoke, he's won one PGA and one British Open championship. I know he had won two majors. He's been on the senior tour for a couple times, won a senior tour event in 2017. He won the 91 PGA and the 95 British Open. I'm going through his Wikipedia page here. They have an entire section entitled Incidents during golf tournaments. I mean, this is what I would expect Bears Wikipedia page to read like. You know, just incidents during Walmart shopping excursions.
That wasn't my fault, man.
Daly has had several incidents during golf tournaments which have contributed to his wild thing image, including the following. During the 1998 PGA Tour's Bay Hill Invitational, Daly used a 3-wood to hit 6 golf balls into the water during the final round. Daly finally got his 7th attempt over the water, which was a distance of approximately 270 yards. Daly shot an 18 on the par 5 6th hole and finished the round with a score of 85. He went full 10 cup. In the 2000 U.S. Open, he shot a 14 on the par 5 18th. And withdrew after an opening round 83. Daly hit 3 golf balls into the Pacific Ocean and hit another into a backyard next to the fairway.
Yeah. It's funny.
In 2002, after making triple bogey 7 on his last hole at the Coulomb course in Australia, Daly threw his putter and ball into a pond and later failed to sign for a 78 on his scorecard, disqualifying himself from the tournament. He was later fined by the Australian Tour and was ordered to write a letter of apology to a tour official he verbally abused.
Could you imagine John Daly, drunken, typing his apology letter? A Marlboro hanging out of his mouth?
Yeah, I'd imagine an agent probably manufactured that for him. 2008, he broke a spectator's camera in Australia. Is that a... Daly evidently has had a lot of issues in Australia. The big fella does not operate well down under, evidently. During 2011, the Australian Open, he walked off during the first round after hitting all of his golf balls into the water. His problem started on the 10th hole when he received an automatic 2-stroke penalty for hitting the wrong ball in the bunker. He must have been hammered.
Yeah.
Hung over anyway. On the 11th hole, he hit 7 golf balls in the water before leaving the tournament. He's just like, I'm out. And in the second round of the 2015 PGA Championship at the Whistling Straits Golf Course in Haven, Wisconsin, Daly, who was at the time 1 over par, right at the cut line, hit 3 consecutive tee shot attempts into the water of Lake Michigan at the par 3 7th hole. He used a 4-iron on the first unsuccessful try, then switched to a 6-iron on the next two failed tries. After his fourth attempt, his seventh shot, which found the green, Daly was so livid about his shot selection that he threw his 6-iron into Lake Michigan, ended up scoring a septuple bogey 10, dropping to +8, and he finished the round with 82 and missed the cut.
A septuple?
Septuple bogey, 7.
Then you said 10.
Yeah, because it's a par 3.
Oh, gotcha. So, sorry.
So Matt on Twitter sent us or retweeted a picture of him today. He's got a lit cigarette in one hand, wheeling up to the green here. Cigarette in one hand, McDonald's cup in the cup holder.
I mean, what are they doing, man? Like, is that good for the game?
No. I think it's kind of a bad look for the game.
It's kind of sad, isn't it? Like, they're just – it reminds me –
he's just a spectacle.
It reminds me of, like, did you ever see that wrestling documentary about, like, Scott Hall and all the problems he had? And, like, he had signed up to do some small wrestling promotion in Maryland somewhere, and he was so messed up and out of it when he arrived there that he couldn't get dressed and go out and do anything. He couldn't get dressed and walk down there and wave to the crowd, let alone wrestle. And so, like, the shady promoters who had put this thing on sent two guys out there to basically hold him up, and they drug him out there and, like, drug him around the ring. He's, you know, like, doesn't even know where he's at. I mean, it was pathetic. It was really sad. And I mean, obviously he's not in that bad shape. He's playing the tournament, but this is golf, man. It's not pro wrestling. This seems like pro wrestling for golf.
Just sitting, you know, playing around at one of the local municipal courses with your buddies.
I like the guy. He's an entertaining guy, and overall, he's been good for the game. But this is kind of pathetic. I mean, that's my take anyway. You guys see this Elijah Simmons dunk?
I did.
I was more impressed with the 95-foot shot after it swished.
I didn't see that.
You didn't watch the whole video?
No.
Soon right after he dunks it.
Yeah, he dunks it.
He gets the ball back.
And throws it down the other end and goes in?
Yeah. You remember that crazy scream John Henderson used to do when the guy would slap him after he slapped him when he was going down the hall?
Yeah.
Elijah Simmons got that in his repertoire.
Think he's got a little Big John in him?
Yeah, he's got a lot of them. He's like scary defensive lineman.
Ooh. It's a bold comparison, my friend.
I think the kid's got that kind of motor, Russell.
Both from the mid-state. Wait, did he go to Pearl Cone too?
Yeah.
What school did Elijah Simmons go to? Can you look that up quick, Brandon?
He's at Pearl Cone.
That's where Big John went. About that?
Yeah.
From the mid-state, John Henderson was what, 6'7", 290 when he came in here? Well over 300 by the time he left.
6'7", yeah, probably.
And this kid's like, they say he's 6'2".
Yeah, pro cone.
350.
Oh, man. It's been a long time since we've had.
It's been a minute since we had somebody that had that kind of.
Who are the best defensive linemen of the swoon era that we've had here? We'll define that 2008 to now. Obviously, Derek Barnett, number one.
Derek Barnett.
Malik Jackson, would you put him in there? I mean, he's had a really long NFL career.
Yeah. He was just here for the one, though, wasn't he? Surely to God, that's not it.
No, yeah, I'm just drawing a blank here. I know we've had others.
If Tuttle doesn't get hurt, he's probably a first-round draft pick. Like, if he hadn't played in those Georgia games early on.
Well, we went through that stretch where we had a new defensive line coach every single year.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, when was the last time we went through, I guess, who was the Stripling? Was Butch's O-line coach for the first 4 years. And I guess it's this, you know, 3 and 3 years. But it's a lot of transition, man. Offensive line was the same way. You went from Mahoney to Wells to Will Friend or Will Enemy. Who dubbed him Will Enemy? He's one of our callers. Yeah, one of our knucklehead callers. It was pretty good.
It was either Josh or Travis. I can't remember which one.
I think it was Big Josh. All right, coming up. Coming up, we've got Rick Butler with your top five at five, and then a major programming announcement immediately following the top five. So here in about 10 minutes, we're going to settle all family fan-run business, and we got a new show, new daily show that we're going to unveil coming up next here on The Drive, Fan Run Radio. Stay with us.